This is Mark Stein. Welcome to the fifth of our special Sinatra Centennial series, The Song Is You.
I hear music when I look at you, a beautiful theme of every dream I ever knew. Down deep in my heart, I hear it play. I feel it start and then melt away. I hear music when I touch your hand, a beautiful melody of some enchanted land. Music is sweet, the words are true, the song is.
Frank Sinatra sang the best songs of the 20th century. Some were by the big names, some were by one-hit wonders, but in this series we cover them all, as we hear some of Sinatra's best performances and the stories of the songs that helped him shine in the words of the songwriters who wrote them. On today's show, the song is Julie Stein.
But send that rainbow to me.
Susan Birkenhead.
But he called me up and he said, just listen. Frank is going into the studio on Tuesday. And I said, Frank who?
And John Kander and Fred Ebb.
Fred Ebb and I wrote a song called New York, New York.
The song is them, and the singer is Frank Sinatra.
Why can't I let you know the song my heart would sing? That beautiful rhapsody of love and youth and spring. The music is sweet, the words are true, the song is you.
March 21st, 1961, the Capitol Tower in Hollywood. Frank Sinatra with orchestra arranged and conducted by Billy May. The song is Sammy Kahn and Julie Stein.
It seems to me I've heard that song before. It's from an old familiar score. I know it well, that melody. It's funny how a theme recalls a favorite dream, a dream that brought you so close to me. I know each word because I've heard that song before. The lyrics said forevermore, forevermore's a memory. Please have them play it again. And I remember just when I heard that lovely song before.
If you're a Sinatra fan, you've heard a lot of Julie Stein songs before. He wrote for Frank for almost half a century, and one day we'll put together a whole show about Stein and Sinatra and listen to Frank singing Three Coins in the Fountain and Just in Time and All I Need is the Girl, and Julie explaining why Frank was all wet when he said People, People Who Need People was a lousy song. But today we're going to focus on just the very beginning and the very end of their relationship together. If you listen to Julie Stein's big, brassy, blaring overture to Gypsy, you'd think that's as American as it gets. But in fact, Julie was born far away across the ocean in Britain, as he told me many, many years ago.
I was born in London. I came to America because my father was an egg inspector, and they were employing many English egg inspectors who knew how to pack the eggs in a certain way to crate them to send them back to Europe, because at that time there was a shortage of eggs in Europe. It was during World War I. And my father moved to Chicago, and so I had to move to Chicago, too. That's what, because of an egg.
Yes. So from those eggs, Julie Stein came to America.
Right.
Now, you mentioned before we started that you'd at one time considered writing a musical based on the life of Sir Harry Lauder, the great Scots entertainer.
Yes, I suppose it's been on my mind for about 20 years now. Why I wanted to do it was Harry Lauder was really responsible for me playing the piano, because many years ago in London, as many kids are, I was a child entertainers. I used to do sort of dancing and singing in vaudeville, and very cheap vaudeville at that. And I used to do Harry Lauder impersonations in my act. And Harry Lauder was at the, I think it was at the Hippodrome, and my mother and father took me to see Lauder, and we had a box seat. And without him knowing, while he was performing, I climbed over the box seat on the stage to the exasperation of everybody in the theater and Harry Lauder, who turned around and stopped his number he was doing. And they asked me my name and asked me what I do. I said, I do everything you do. He said, would you like to sing a song? So I sang She's My Daisy, one of his songs.
For she's my daisy, my bonny daisy.
And the audience applauded, and he took me back to the box. My father, I was reprimanded. I was spanked pretty good for jumping over the box seat. However, I went backstage, and I apologized for interfering with his performance. And then he says, don't do impersonations, learn to play the piano or something. And I learned to play the piano, and then I started learning playing the piano. Many years later in Chicago, after we had moved to Chicago, Harry Lauder was playing in the vaudeville at the Great Northern Theater in Chicago. And I, my mother and father, of course, we all wanted to go. We went. And when I went back there to his dressing room, and I played him a little Mozart piece, and he was fascinated by it. He says, remember I told you to play the piano, you're good. When you impersonate, you're someone else.
It seems to me I've heard that song before. It's from an old familiar score. I know it well, that melody.
You must do something creatively on your own. I did that. So I went out to California. I was a vocal coach first.
Yes. You were on
20th Century Fox.
Yes, and then you worked on a lot of westerns, I think.
Yeah, well, after 20th Century Fox, Daryl Zanuck told me that I should become a song. He felt that I had the talent to be a good songwriter, so he got me a job at Republic Pictures, which I wrote pictures, songs for Gene Autry. But I was learning all the time. You see, I hadn't thrown my real talents. I was just getting to be. And then finally I wrote with Frank Lesser, I wrote my first big song, I Don't Want to Walk Without You, Baby, and then from then on, never stopped.
Here they are, the big three, the trio of tunes that head your hit parade this week.
And way up there in the big time and holding the number three spot is the sensational new song that climbed on board the parade for the first time last Saturday night. Frank Sinatra sings your third place favorite, I've Heard That Song Before.
February 27th, 1943, the CBS Network radio show, Your Hit Parade, with the Hit Parade Orchestra, arranged and conducted by Mark Warner. And for the very first time, Frank Sinatra sings a Julie Stein song.
It seems to me I've heard that song before. It's from an old familiar score. I know it well, that melody.
It's funny how a theme recalls a favorite dream, a dream that brought you so close to me. I know each word because I've heard that song before. The lyric said, forevermore, forevermore's a memory. Please have them play it again, and I'll remember just when I heard that lovely song before.
You've heard this song before.
Saturday night is the loneliest night in the week, 'cause that's the night that my sweetie and I used to dance cheek to cheek.
And this.
Give me 5 minutes more, only 5 minutes more. Let me stay in your arms.
And this.
Time after time, I tell myself that I'm so lucky to be loving you.
And everyone's heard this.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. Since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
I think the reason we had songs then at last, speaking of longevity and songs, is because all a bunch of great new singers started. I mean, real singers. Sinatra was growing up, Crosby was coming along. I mean, Kate Smith and Morton Downey and Doris Day and Tony Bennett was just emerging, and Vic Damone were just emerging, and the Four Aces and the Four This and the Four, a bunch of new sounds were coming.
Very few songwriter-singer combinations have had the run of hits Julie Stein, Sammy Kahn, and Frank Sinatra had in the 1940s. There was just one problem. It wasn't really what Julie Stein wanted to do.
I had just caught on in Hollywood writing popular songs with Sammy Kahn, and I wanted to do a Broadway show.
The torch I carry is handsome. It's worth its heartache in ransom. And when the twilight steals, I know how the lady in the harbor feels. When I want rain, I get sunny weather. I'm just as blue as the sky. Since love is gone, can't pull myself together. Guess I'll hang my tears out to dry.
You tempted Sammy Kahn to Broadway, but he preferred the easy life in Hollywood, writing those Academy Awards.
Yeah, right. Writing, because he didn't get the good notices, so to speak, that he... They were derogatory to his talents. Well, that doesn't mean anything, because the critics in the theater will hate you 1 year, but discover you the next year. But that's the fascinating thing about writing the theater. You have to learn accept no good. In the movies, you just write that song and everybody's happy. Never mind later on. People go and see it once. That's it. In the theater, you can go see that same play for 3 years it runs, and that song has longevity. That's why all the great, great standards, most of the great, great standards, come from the theater. All your Cole Porter and Rodgers and Hammerstein, Kurt Weill,
Kern, Gershwin, all that great music came from the theater music. The kind of things that lasted 40 years in Sinatra albums and Barbara Streisand albums, all those good songs. All those good songs. Now, here's a proof of it. All those fabulous songs that are on the early Streisand albums and Sinatra for 40 years and Crosby for 40 years, all those that lasted and lasted and lasted. Why did Linda Ronstadt go and do Hang My Tears Out to Dry, which was a 40-year-old song? Because during the years it became a standard. Did you know that Hang My Tears Out to Dry is a theater song from the first show I wrote? It was a show closed in a row.
It was called Glad to See You, and nobody was glad to see it. It was a disaster, and it left no trace except for one small jewel rescued by Julie Stein's old friend. In 1946, Sinatra made this song a hit, and a decade later made it a masterpiece.
When I want rain, I get sunny weather. I'm just as blue as the sky. Since love is gone, can't pull myself together. Guess I'll hang my tears out to dry. Friends ask me out, I tell them I'm busy. I must get a new alibi. I stay at home and ask myself, who is he? Guess I'll hang my tears out to dry. Dry little teardrops, my little teardrops, hanging on a string of dreams. Fly little memories, my little memories, remind her of our crazy schemes. Somebody said, just forget about her. So I gave that treatment a try. Strangely enough, I got along without her. Then one day she passed me right by. Oh, well, I guess I'll hang my tears out to dry.
The big standard song from One Almighty Flop Show. Julie Stein had discovered he enjoyed writing music for drama, even flop drama, more than he enjoyed writing big hit pop songs for the biggest pop singer of the day.
That's how I broke up with Sammy Cahn. I didn't speak to Sinatra for 3 years, or he didn't speak to me for 3 years. But the thing was that I went to Frank, I said, Frank, you know, I don't want to build my whole career around you. I find that now I'm writing just nothing but Sinatra songs. And if I write for Doris Day, it shouldn't be a Sinatra song. And so
I'll be good for you, and you should sing everybody's tune. I've had 6 wonderful years with you. You are singing the standard, but the new, see, that's our Van Heusen guy. I left.
Bye-bye, baby, so long.
Bye-bye, baby.
Just you remember that you're my baby when
they give you the eye.
And although we know that you care, you'd better write and declare
that though on the loose, you are still on the square. I'll be gloomy, but send that rainbow to me.
Then the shadows will fly.
Though you'll be gone for a while,
before very long,
I know that I'll be smiling
with my baby by and by.
Frank Sinatra, arranged by George Siravo. Sinatra would continue to sing Julie Stein tunes, but they were no longer expressly written for him. Bye Bye Baby came from Julie Stein's first big Broadway hit, Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, starring Carol Channing, to be followed by Peter Pan, Bells Are Ringing, Gypsy, Funny Girl. And then about 3 decades later, in the 1980s, I was a disc jockey and poring over the fine print on the back of a new LP, and I noticed that Julie Stein was once again writing for Sinatra with a young, brand new lyricist. March 1982, Caesar's Palace, Las Vegas. Frank Sinatra with the Caesar's Palace Orchestra, conducted by Vincent Falcone Jr., arranged by Gordon Jenkins. The song is Julie Stein and Susan Birkenhead.
Now that I have your undivided attention, I should like to do a song that's a little bit quieter than the others. And also to tell you that it comes from an album we released a few months ago called She Shut Me Down. And obviously the album is full of saloon songs. Being a saloon singer, that's my racket. Not many of us left, I think, is just Mr. Bennett and myself who do these kind of songs. And we're going to continue so that they don't die, because they're important to the American music catalog. This is one of the new songs in the album. Most of the songs are new, and there are a couple of standards. However, this one was written by Susan Birkenhead and the great Julie Stein, and arranged by Don Costa. Sad but beautiful, called Hey Look No Crying. Hey look no crying, though she has 1 foot out the door, I should be crying. It ought to hurt a little more. I should resent her, try to prevent her, whatever for.
In the 70s, Sinatra wasted a lot of time doing soft rock covers of whatever schlocky hit was on the charts. And in the 80s, he more or less gave up on new stuff entirely and stuck to the standards. However, 2 of the last great Sinatra recordings were of brand new material composed by an old, old friend, Julie Stein, with lyrics by a Tyro writer he was kind of mentoring. Today, Susan Birkenhead is one of the most in-demand lyricists on Broadway, and that's always been her first love, theatre, character, plot. She's not a pop songwriter and never aspired to be one. And then one day the phone rang, and it was Julie Stein.
Well, he called me one day. He never said hello. He just said, I have an idea. But he called me up and he said, just listen. Frank is going into the studio on Tuesday. And I said, Frank who? And there was this terrible silence. And he said, what are you, stupid? He said, Sinatra's going into the studio and he's doing an album of saloon songs. Mm. And I said, what's a saloon song? And
there's another terrible silence.
And he said, it's about this guy and he loses his girl. He said, so I've written the tune. I'm sending it over by messenger. I need it tomorrow.
Wow.
So he sent the tune over, and the tune was wonderful. And I paced up and down. I had never written a pop lyric.
Never?
Never. And I was throwing pencils at the wall, and eventually I was crying. And my husband came into the room, and he said, what's the matter? And I said, I can't do this. I don't know what to do. I can't pull something out of the air. And he said, all right, you're writing for a character, and that character is Frank Sinatra. And the love of his life has just walked out on him. Go.
So,
and you know what? I walked in and I wrote it in like 25 minutes.
Because your husband said, treat it like the kid in Treasure Island. This just, is what he needs to sing at this point in the story.
He just said, you know, character, plot, go. And then suddenly there it was.
Hey, look. No crying, though she has 1 foot out the door, I should be crying. It ought to hurt a little more. I should resent her, try to prevent her, whatever for. Hey, look, I knew it. She's not the type to hang around. Someday she was bound to go. With that fact in mind, my tears were never apropos.
It's a wonderfully grown-up song because it's really about someone who has perspective on love gone wrong. You realize even as you're, it's not a time to spill your guts out because you've had love and you've enjoyed love. That's basically the theme there, which is kind of unusual, isn't it?
I guess, but I knew a little bit about Sinatra. From Julie, who told endless stories. Yeah. There were times when he was part of Sinatra's gang and other times when they didn't speak for long periods of time. But when Frank got on the phone, Julie turned into a little boy. All the bluster was, yes, Frank. Right. It was really sweet. It was. Yeah. And I knew about his great love for Ava Gardner. Which, according to Julie, he never really got over. Right. And somehow or other, I took all of that and his persona into account because I was writing for a character and did what I always do, which is to crawl inside the character. And that, and the first, and usually I look for what is the first logical sound to come out of this character's mouth. And, I wrote an intro to the song, too, which Sinatra cut in the studio.
Right.
It's a really nice intro, but he cut it. And I wrote that, you know, sort of crafting that. And then I thought, okay. And that's when I sat and I thought, what is the, you know, what is the cry that's going to come out of this mouth? And I just thought, hey, look, you know. And then when I brought it to Julie... It was really the first time I brought him something that he didn't mess with. The only word he kept coming back to was apropos. And he said, I don't know. And then the next day he said, leave it in. And that's the word that caught Sinatra's attention.
With that fact in mind, My tears were never apropos.
It's a fascinating thing, you know. Sinatra sang thousands of songs, and he sang Cole Porter and Rudyard Kipling and George Harrison. And that word, apropos, none of those for Kipling and Hammerstein and Noel Coward and John Denver, none of them had ever put apropos in his mouth until you. Where'd that come from?
I don't know. Honestly, it just felt right at the moment. My tears were never apropos. It just felt right. And when Julie said, I don't know if that's the right word, and I kept saying, it just feels right, Julie. It just really feels. I mean, that's what I think he would say.
My tears were never apropos.
And he just took it and gave it to the arranger and recorded it. About a week later, my husband and I were sort of lazing around on a Sunday morning, and Jonathan Schwartz was talking about Frank Sinatra in the studio doing new songs. And he said, I'm going to play a new song by Julie Stein and Frank Sinatra called Hey Look, No Crying. My husband leaped out of bed, called the station, and got him on a commercial break and told him who had written the song. And apparently Jonathan said, put her on. So he said, who are you? He said, how do I know you wrote the song? He said, recite the lyric to me. So I recited the lyric to him, and he said, I'll be damned. Okay.
Jonathan Schwartz, for non-American listeners, knows more about the Sinatra catalog than anybody else. But he'd never heard of you. He didn't know who you were.
Why would he?
Yeah. So he needed you to prove that you actually were the lyric writer of this song. That's pretty. And did he give you a credit at the end?
Yes. That was all because of my husband, who was insistent on it.
Well, I will say I saw Sinatra perform it live, I think two or three times in the 80s in various places, and he always made a point of crediting you. So he would say, here's a song by Susan Birkenhead and Julie Stein, and he didn't always get the arranger right. I heard him credit it to Don Costa, when in fact I think it was Gordon Jenkins. But he got the name of the lyricist right, so he was ahead of Jonathan Schwartz in that respect.
He always credited writers, which not many people do, but he did.
And sometimes he credited them, and then, Richard Rodgers, the writers would be standing there tearing their hair out as he did something to their song that they didn't like. How did you feel at the finished version of Hey, Look, No Crying?
Well, you know, we were not allowed in the studio because Julie goes crazy in his door, went crazy in the studio. And so I didn't hear it until a man from Warner Chappell Music named Frank Military came to Julie's office, and he said, okay, sit down. I'm going to play this for you. Now, I had just begun. I mean, I was Miss Nobody from Nowhere. And he put the record on, and I almost fainted. I mean, I thought, too slow. I no longer think so. But you know, it wasn't exactly what I expected, but it was Frank Sinatra. And he was singing my lyric, and he was singing it magnificently. I mean, if he had been an actor, you know, on the stage, he could not have done a better job.
Hey, look, no sorrow. I have been luckier than most. And if tomorrow I still feel haunted by her ghost, I will remember how I loved her and how it was. Who needs crying with those memories waves in tow. Me, I'm flying. I've got memories to show. Just goodbye, I'm letting go.
But at the time, you'd expected it to be a little zippier.
A little bit. Not, yeah. You know, a hair faster, because
right, right.
Julie always played it faster.
No, and he always, I mean, he told Sinatra, you know, Sinatra recorded Just in Time, and he said, Frank, you blew it. So he wasn't, he had his, he could be difficult to please on that front.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was happy. Julie was very happy, despite the fact that they cut his intro, our intro, and cut the bridge.
Yeah. He had a good instinct for that.
Yeah.
I mean, if you go to a little cabaret thing and someone's doing a Rodgers and Hart or whatever it is, and they sing every verse, and by about the 17th verse,
you think,
actually, nobody needs to hear this verse. And Sinatra seemed to have very good instincts for the stuff you didn't need in there.
Exactly.
And you kind of have come around to his judgment on that.
Oh, immediately, you know, 5 minutes after I heard it.
Yeah. It was just right. There's one thing that's absolutely beautiful that he does on there, which he makes it the high point of the song, really, and it's a little rubato, colla voce kind of moment on Me, I'm Flying.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, the first time you rhyme crying in the song, isn't it? So I think that's actually the first time the title is rhymed. And he seems to have honed in on that as the kind of emotional peak of the song. Is that how you wrote it?
It's a mystery. I just remember, who needs crying with these memories in tow? Yeah. Me, I'm flying. And And he does it. It's so moving because when he gets to the end of the phrase, there's a little catch in his voice, too.
Right, right, right.
A little emotional catch.
Yeah, yeah.
And Julie swore that it all had to do with Ava Gardner. Swore. He said, Frank loves that song because that's Frank's life.
Me, I'm flying. I've got memories to show. Hail, look, no crying, just goodbye. I'm letting go.
It's got a great final line, just goodbye,
I'm letting go. You know, it was a combination again of Sinatra's life,
right,
and personal experience, and it felt right for this person,
right,
this Frank Sinatra person, to say, you know, I've had this great love, and so I'm not crying, I'm just letting go.
Yeah.
It just felt right.
Yeah, I can see that. It's, you know, the funny thing about Hey, Look, No Crying is it's a mature perspective on love. And as I said earlier, you were very much younger than Julie Stein at the time. You're at the beginning of your career.
Yeah.
to be able to write a mature song when you weren't of a mature age, as it were.
Yeah, but my character was mature. hard to explain. I had also been through a tumultuous time. I was married before I married my second husband, and it was not a good marriage, and it was a terrible marriage. Mm. In fact, I remember Julie saying, "Why didn't you tell me that? I would have Frank get somebody to break his knees." Anyway, he adored my second husband, and as did I. And I guess that helped in a way. I'm not really sure.
It's an unusual quality in Hey Look, No Crying. And then the strange thing about It's Sunday, which is this other song you did for Sinatra, is that is also a very kind of mellow and a mature perspective on love as well.
Well, but that was Sunday morning, and anybody who's really in love, you know, knows what Sunday mornings are like.
Drowsy morning sunlight, gentle kisses for my love. It's Sunday, it's Sunday. She needn't waken, I'll fix the eggs and bacon her way. While she just dozes, lately I've taken to bringing her a flower on her train. She's fond of roses.
And I can't remember when it was that Julie came to me and he said, "We have to write more songs for Sinatra." Frank loved our songs. So he said, Frank's going into the studio again.
Right.
He said, and he wants a, you know, like a kind of a love song. And so I don't know how or why, but it occurred to me that Sunday morning was the most delicious, wonderful time for two people who love each other. And I wrote it. At first he said, "You know, I wrote a song called Sunday."
Yeah, his first hit, 1926.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he didn't care because he loved the song.
No, I was asking him. I can't remember why, but I one time I asked him about that song because it was his first song, and I think he wrote it to impress a girl.
Probably.
And he was down in Miami or somewhere like that, and he just sort of came up with it to impress a girl. It was his first hit, and he didn't write another one for like 15, 16 years until I Don't Want to Walk Without You, Baby.
I'm blue every Monday, thinking over Sunday, that one day when I'm with you. It seems that I sigh all day Tuesday, I cry all day Wednesday. Oh my, how I long for you.
And so I was asking about this song of his, Sunday, and he goes, "Oh, wait till you hear my new Sunday song." So I always think of them, it's a strange thing, but I always think of them as a kind of bookends in emotional maturity, because, like, he's a kid in 1926, and he writes this song, Sunday, to impress a girl, you know, because he's got to work Monday to Saturday, and Sunday is the one day you get to be with the girl. And then this other song comes along 6 decades later, which is, you know, almost, it's like when you're not trying to impress somebody anymore, you've settled into, you've found the person, you've settled in, you just find contentment with each other. It's like, they're like emotional, there's a sort of emotional bookends of a life there.
We'll talk away the morning, read the papers, misbehave, enjoying each other. The world is ours to play. We'll take a walk or stay. Long and lazy hours to have and hide away in. For one day, thank goodness, it's Sunday.
You've got another word in there that nobody else gave for him to sing.
Bacon?
It's Sunday. Well, you might be right on bacon. No, actually, he did sing bacon before. I can tell you. He did a song, it's like a single in the early 50s. It's got bacon in it. I can't remember now. Jonathan Schwartz would know.
Yes.
He'd have a whole bacon theme for the rest of the hour.
Looks like I've been taken, shaken off the tree. Looks like you'll be making bacon just for me.
That's not the word. It's misbehave.
Oh, yeah.
And that's, again, that's such a, like, a kind of, it's such a sort of nice word in that context.
It was the only way to say it, given, I mean, I couldn't be more graphic about it. And I don't know, it just felt right. It just really felt right.
And it's the imagery is very nice because we've got the eggs and bacon, and there's the rose on a breakfast tray. She's fond of roses. But again, it's like it's a sweetly euphemistic word in that context.
Yeah.
Just lovely there.
She needn't waken. I'll fix the eggs and bacon her way while she just dozes. Lately I've taken to bringing her a flower on her tray. She's fond of roses. We'll talk away the morning, read the papers, misbehave, enjoying each other.
Sinatra had great difficulty getting an arrangement of this song that said what he wanted it to say. It was a bizarre business. He gave it to Gordon Jenkins, and then I think Don Costa took a, or Joe Parnello or somebody had another go at it, and the full band, it never kind of worked for him on that.
The story I heard, and I don't know if it's apocryphal or because again we were not allowed in the studio.
Right. He wasn't wrong on that with with Julie Sachs.
But Julie was like Rumpelstiltskin. No, I'm just, you know.
No. And there were people, there were songwriters he allowed in the studio because they didn't do that.
Julie's favorite phrase was, "I'm pulling my score."
Right.
which he used constantly. But I heard that he had Tony Mottola, you're right.
Who was his guitarist at that time.
Play the first track.
He was concerned that, you know, if you gave it the full Gordon Jenkins 120 strings, that somehow the intimacy of the moment would be destroyed.
Yeah.
Is that how the song sounded to you?
When I first heard that it was just the guitar, my heart sank. And I thought, how are they going to do this with just guitar? But when I heard it, it felt good. It still occasionally feels a little bit naked, but it works because it does have a feeling of intimacy.
Was it something important to you, or did you think, well, were you just thinking, well, you know, Julie Stein's known Sinatra for 40 years and this fellow seems to be important to Julie, so I'll just string along with it. Was it not a big deal to you? Or was it
was huge. Hmm. It was huge. I mean, it was... I had not really done anything except Captain Kangaroo.
It is Sunday. It's Sunday. Lately I've taken to bringing her a flower on her train. She's fond of roses. We'll talk away the morning, read the papers, misbehave, enjoying each other. The world is ours to play in. We'll take a walk or stay in. Long and lazy hours to have and hide away in. For one day, thank goodness, it's Sunday.
You said to me that there's like a little, you've got like a little handful of songs you wrote for Sinatra. So that in theory, there's a great unmade album. You know, Sinatra sings the Stein and Birkenhead songbook that never got made.
Yeah. Actually, we could do that. Frank was looking for a song about either New York or Los Angeles. And we wrote That's L.A., which is really a great song. But what happened is that Julie got carried away when he recorded it. I have to find it and send it to you. And he wrote a middle section that went on for a week and a half.
Right.
I mean, it was all about the streets of L.A. because he had lived there for so long. And, you know, if there's some way to splice out, this is a cassette tape. I guess I can have it digitized and cut out the middle. But the rest of it is really good. And it was very sort of swingy Sinatra. Nelson Riddle Sinatra. That's L.A. is really a great song. He chose New York, New York. One can hardly blame him.
Did he, do you disagree with that choice?
You know, I mean, it's a great song.
Right,
and I
right.
love John Kander,
right,
I do.
Right.
And I loved Fred Ebb.
Hey, look, no crying. Just goodbye. I'm letting go.
Sinatra sings Julie Stein and Susan Birkenhead. Well, since Susan brought up the matter of that Los Angeles, New York song Frank was looking for, October 24th, 1987, Frank Sinatra with orchestra conducted by Bill Miller. The song is John Kander and Fred Ebb.
Written by Fred Ebb and John Kander, orchestrated by Don Costa, and stolen by me.
Start spreading the news. I am leaving
today. I want to be a part of it.
New York, New York, New York, New York.
New York, New York, New York, New York.
Do 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 do.
They always say it's a nice place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there.
New York.
They always say it's a nice place to sightsee, but I wouldn't want to live there.
New York.
Of course I do like a do on Park Avenue, or to view a canoe at the Central Park Zoo, or stare at the glare of the Broadway lights, or go to Madison Square to catch the fights. Well, they can all pack a comb, hurry home, but me, I like the life I live there.
New York,
and they
New
can
York.
All take the train back to Maine, but me, I live the life I like there. For the Bowery bums, the plaza, the slums, the automat and the stork, I love New York, New York.
You don't always get it right the first time. That's John Kander on piano and backing vocals with Fred Ebb singing, and their initial attempt at the title song for the 1977 film New York, New York. The director, Martin Scorsese, and Liza Minnelli thought it was fine, but her co-star Robert De Niro was not happy about it, and he prevailed upon them to change their minds. In the course of a long partnership, Kander and Ebb wrote hit shows and films like Cabaret and Chicago, but their longest professional relationship was with Liza Minnelli. In effect, they were to Liza what Julie Stein and Sammy Kahn were to the young Frank Sinatra, an in-house songwriting team. Kander and Ebb had been writing for her since their first Broadway show together in the mid-60s, Flora the Red Menace, as Liza recalled to me on TV many years ago.
We were so young, and we were hungry, and we were enthralled, and we were filled with ambition and a lot of talent, but we didn't know where we were going.
Start spreading the news, I'm leaving today. I wanna be a part of it, New York, New York.
Their director for that first shot at the Broadway lights was the legendary George Abbott, who a generation earlier had also directed Julie Stein's first Broadway show. And as John, Fred and Liza told me, Mr. Abbott wasn't too keen on Liza even auditioning.
Mr. Abbott was sort of anti-Liza at that particular moment. He didn't want her to audition. And the day she did audition, he had a very loud voice. And as she was introduced, they said, well, this is Liza Minnelli. And she started to walk across the stage and he screamed practically, well, this is a waste of time. And I found out later, although it was no surprise to me, Liza heard him.
After the first reading, said, I was wrong. You're gonna be really good.
I remember he turned to me once and said, this is the most talented little girl I've ever worked with.
And yet, in the end, the show wasn't a commercial hit. Does that matter when it's kind
well,
of...
Well, I think you'd have to define hit. It may not have been a hit. It certainly wasn't a hit in terms of Broadway or commerce or et cetera. But for Johnny and me, and Liza, it was a smash.
And Fred Ebb's right. From that first forgotten flop, everything else followed. And Kander and Ebb and Liza Minnelli wound up, as someone once said, king of the hill, top of the heap.
I want to wake up in the city that doesn't sleep to find I'm a king of the hill, ha, top of the heap. My little town blues. away. I'll make a brand new start of it in old New York.
How do you make a smash for Johnny and Fred and Liza even bigger? Add Frank.
We come to a song that was written for the great Liza Minnelli. And speaking of that, I would like to have her stand up and take a big bow. I love you. Start spreading the news. We are leaving today. We're gonna make a brand new start of it. New York, New York.
These vagabond shoes are longing to stray and step around.
That song is so insinuating from that opening vamp, you sometimes wonder if there's any other way to do it. Well, maybe. Before he was a successful composer, John Kander was a dance arranger on Broadway. As a matter of fact, he was the dance arranger for Julie Stein's big hit show, Gypsy. And once, for a television show, I asked John to sit down at his piano and show us what it is that a dance arranger actually does.
Fred Ebb and I wrote a song called New York, New York. And if that were in a show, the dance arranger would take certain elements of it and play around with it depending on what the choreographer wanted to do. For instance, in New York, New York, there's a vamp that goes like this. Now, suppose the extension of that in the piece were to be a lyrical pas de deux. And he might take an element of that vamp and do something like, oh. Et cetera. Or if there was a big waltz that was a part of the extension of it could be. That sort of thing.
Well, maybe there's a place for that sort of thing. But in the end, when it comes to New York, New York, the world wants to hear this sort of thing.
Vinnie Falcone takes the baton now to conduct one of the most exciting pieces of music of all of my years. This Don Costa arrangement of the Fred Ebb John Kander love song to the city that never sleeps and the ball team that lost. Start spreading the news. I'm leaving today. I want to be
a part of it. New York, New York. These vagabond shoes, they are longing to stray right through the very heart of it. New York, New York. I want to wake up in a city that doesn't sleep and find I'm king of the hill, top of the heap. My small town blues, they are melting away. I will make a brand new start of it in old New York, if I can make it there, I'll make it. Anywhere, it's up to you. New York, New York. In New York, New York, I want to wake up in a city that doesn't sleep and find that I'm number one, top of the list, head of the heap, king of the hill. These are little town blues.
Voice was Frank Sinatra, the song was John Kander and Fred Ebb, Susan Birkenhead and Julie Stein. See you next time.
The music is sweet, the words are true, the song is